Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, one and all to the first ever edition of the new segment of the official Redbird Rants podcast. This is Extra Innings, and I'm your host, Tito Rivera, and I am joined by my co-editor, Dr. Michael Miles. Dr. Miles, how are you tonight?
Man, I am doing really well. I'm out at some soccer fields watching my son practice soccer. It is a beautiful 73 degrees as the sun is going down, so I'm doing pretty well.
Awesome. I wish I could say the same in Kansas City where it's a nice 50. But we're also joined by one of our contributors, Gene Bonds, or you may know him as Crash STL on Twitter. Gene, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, Gene, we've got a special guest tonight. I'm going to kick it over to you so you can introduce him. Take it away.
Sounds good. Our special edition of Extra Innings on Redbird Rants. Our first official guest is Post-Dispatch columnist Benjamin Hockman. You could also catch him on his own podcast, Toasted Ravioli. And you could also catch him with Chris Dedman and Travis Terrell on We Are Live. Welcome to the show, Benjamin. Thank you for joining us.
It's an honor. How are you doing?
And we're doing good. We're very honored and grateful for you to take some time out to join us tonight to talk about some Cardinals.
Yeah. I got them on right now, actually, watching the Cardinals in Montreal. It's bringing back 1990s memories, watching the baseball in that weird stadium.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Ben, for joining us. And for everybody listening in right now, thank you for listening to us. We appreciate you going to our website at redbirdrants.com as well. So, Ben, we're going to kick it off, and we've got some questions for you. And one of the first questions I think we all want to know is what's it like covering the St. Louis Cardinals on a day-to-day basis?
My goodness. They say it's the big leagues covering pro sports. Well, covering a franchise of this caliber is the big leagues of the big leagues. And it's one of the reasons why I came home to St. Louis to cover baseball. I was in Denver where they have all four professional sports teams. But when one of my idols, Bernie Miklas, left to go to radio and the opportunity was there at the Post-Dispatch, I was like, man, to cover baseball in a baseball town, in my town, my hometown, I mean, it was a no-brainer. And some of the people on Twitter might say, I have no brain, so there's a fit right there.
I had that same problem, Ben. Actually, if I could just jump in real quick, I don't mean to cut you off. That was one of my questions about Denver and St. Louis. One of my questions is going to be, can you kind of compare what it's like covering Colorado sports compared to St. Louis? And I'm asking that mainly because St. Louis has the label as best fans in baseball. Outside of St. Louis, do we really have that kind of reputation? And just kind of share what it's like, the difference between Colorado and St. Louis, please.
Oh yeah, definitely. There are similar fans in Colorado. There's just not as many passionate, smart thinking baseball fans in the Denver area and that follow the Rockies. And it makes sense. I mean, they didn't have a team until 1993, so generations of people didn't grow up with baseball. You could argue that in Denver, the Broncos are like the Cardinals in St. Louis. With the passion and the history and all that. I think the fans in Denver, they kind of look at people in St. Louis, which means my friends and my family, as like there's a fine line between like passionate and obnoxious. And I guess it just depends on which side we're teetering on, depending on the day and depending on who Matheny put in the game in the eighth inning. There's definite I mean, there's definite, I guess, envy, if you will. I mean, understandably so. I mean, St. Louis, I mean, obviously we're frustrated in this town that the team hasn't made the playoffs in the past two seasons. But if you pull back, step back, it's like, okay, here is a gorgeous stadium, a team with numerous Hall of Famers, a team with its own Hall of Fame with fantastic history, guys, in that regard, and a winning product for more seasons than not in this century.
All right. Hey, hey Ben, this is Dr. Miles here. I had the pleasure of listening to you on a couple of podcasts. So glad you're on ours now for at least this visit. Can you talk to us, what is it like working with other people in the industry and even specifically on the podcasting? So like Mr. Gould and your other friend, Ben Fredrickson, anybody of that nature, what is that like? Now that you are, quote-unquote, in the big leagues.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, and nice to hear your voice, Doc, and hope the soccer game's going well. And I'm jealous of the 72 or whatever. I'm here in St. Louis, and it's rainy and dark. honestly, I went to a birthday celebration, if you will, for the late Bob Bregg. He would have been 100 this month. So the folks from the Sabre Group in St. Louis and the Cardinals Hall of Fame threw a party. And I went down there, and we all sang happy birthday, and I gave a little speech. And what I talked about in the speech, and I'd love to share here, is just the idea of, like, there is so much pride that comes with covering the St. Louis Cardinals for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And in a way, it's almost like an heirloom that's passed down, that's been passed down from Bob Bregg to Rick Hummel, and obviously other people have been passed down this knowledge and this passion. Of course, Derek Gould now is the lead baseball writer, and he is wildly passionate about his coverage and about the team. And then, of course, now there's younger guys like Ben Fredrickson. So, it is, like, without sounding – I mean, at the end of the day, we're just writing about sports. We're not, you know, saving the world, but, like, there is a lot of seriousness and a lot of honor that goes into being the middleman between the fans and the team and covering the team on a daily basis. So those podcasts are a bunch of fun. And with me, like, you know, as a columnist, I try to splash my personality into whatever I write, whether that's having some fun or maybe telling a human interest story or writing something very passionate and pointed about my anger about the team. I try to mix it up every week, even every day.
Awesome.
Your personality definitely does come out in your writing.
Yeah,
oh,
I would agree with that as well. I love reading your articles on the Post-Dispatch. But, I wanted to ask you a question about you said your mentor and idol, Bernie Miklas. What's it like working with him? Because for the longest time growing up, for myself, it was reading Rick Hummel, it was reading Bernie, and you know, they are like my gold standard as well. What was it like working with them?
Well, that's the thing, is I never actually got to work with Bernie since I replaced him, but I'll tell you, I developed a relationship with him as kind of I don't want to make it sound like I was going to his house for 5 hours a day and we're just talking writing all day or anything like that. But what it was when I was in high school and really trying to figure out, like, is sports journalism something I could truly do? I decided to reach out to the best in my city, and that was Bernie, no question. And it was a fun time. It was kind of like a Wild West time, if you will, with the internet, and you know, America Online was new, and we're all kind of just figuring out, like, what this internet thing is. And for context, I graduated high school in 1998, so I'm 37 now. So this, we're talking like 94, 95, and I remember, like, I don't know why he did it or how he did it, but I remember, like, he printed his AOL email address, I think, in the newspaper. And I was like, well, I've got this AOL thing, so that means I can, you know, I can connect with them. So I literally, like, similarly to, like, a fan, you know, calmly, nervously approaching Ozzie Smith for an autograph. I, like, nervously wrote this email on AOL from my thing to his, and we connected. And, you know, every once in a while I would send them questions about journalism. And I remember Sports Plus with Frank Cusimano and Mike Bush and those guys. Mm-hmm. One time they had Bernie on as a guest, and there was, like, this you could go and sit in the live studio audience. Like, at that point, like, my dad could have said, like, all right, we have two choices. We can go to see Frank Cusimano, Bernie Miklas, and Charlie Tuna at the Channel 5 live broadcast, or you can go see The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and it'll have Kathy Ireland and whatever, Tom Cruise and your favorite actor. I'm like, you know what? I got to get to that Sports Plus. And
I'm with you. I would pick Sports Plus too.
Thank you. Yeah. Good choice. And, you know, just, it was just really neat. Like, wow, there he is in the flesh, you know. And I remember asking a question then. And again, so I don't want to make it sound like I was, like, at his, or whatever the phrase is, you know, like a protege and all that. But I definitely read his stuff all the time and would pick his brain on occasion at a very impressionable time in my life.
Awesome. Thanks. So, guys, I think now's the time to transition into the real business of tonight's podcast. That is the St. Louis Cardinals, obviously.
Yeah.
And let's go ahead and start off with one of the big topics right now, and that's Jordan Hicks. Seemingly out of nowhere, Jordan Hicks all of a sudden is set to make the opening day roster. Ben, can you give us a little insight on what's going on right now?
I mean, I think it's just three digits I need to say. 102. We're talking about a human being who throws a 102-mile-per-hour fastball on occasion, and that can be a game changer, you know, I guess both metaphorically and then literally. It literally can change a baseball game, and you can't teach 102, and he's got it on occasion. And, you know, they went through the due diligence of kind of punishing him a little bit for being tardy to meetings and whatever it was, and letting him know he's just not going to get away with things. But gosh, they were always fascinated by his stuff, and who wouldn't be? And I was down there for a few weeks in the early part of camp, and yeah, you watch that thing fly out of his hand. And I remember talking to batters about it, and big league hitters were like, that's big league stuff. And at that point, you know, you don't, if a big league hitter says that's big league stuff, I mean, that's what it is, regardless of the age of the player or what have you. And that's the reality. And Jordan Hicks, maybe he should change his name to Jordan Hoosiers if he's coming to St. Louis. Is on the team. I was sad because my favorite personality in the clubhouse, John Brebbia, is now been sent down to AAA because of this Hicks ascension, but I'm sure we'll see the Brebs at some point this season as well.
Awesome. So I think the obvious follow-up question here is, who's the closer? Is it Dominic Leon? Is it Jordan Hicks? Or is it still closer by committee at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it would just be like a fun guess at this point because they're not going to just say insert name here is the St. Louis Cardinals closer. I do think that Alex Reyes will get the opportunity to be the closer in May, in June. And I think they'll utilize him in that role at some point, but we got to get to that month first. You know, we got a bunch of ball games in April, and you know, I think Dom Leone, who was a pretty good pitcher last year for the Blue Jays, the Toronto Cardinals and the St. Louis Blue Jays. Since basically, I mean, it's incredible the connections that these teams have. But yeah,
if we can only get Josh Donaldson.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that was the thing. I did a story for the Post-Dispatch website about like all the the list of players who have been on the both the Blue Jays and the Cardinals, and it's a stunning and staggering list. You know, from every generation, from a Todd Stottlemyre, a Pat Borders, Pat Hankin, obviously the third baseman with the Roland deal, and Colby, and then all the way up to who we got today with Len Mastrichik and Sung Won Oh, and of course Eugene Koo, the best translator in baseball, is now with the Blue Jays. But yeah, someone said, like, hopefully one day we can add Josh Donaldson to that list, which would be a lot of fun.
Awesome. And I just want to ask one more follow-up question with the Jordan Hicks, you know, ascension, essentially. As I said earlier, it feels very out of nowhere. Was this the plan the entire time, or do you think this is something – when they saw him pitch the other day in spring training down in Florida, they said, you know what, he's got to be on the team.
Yeah, I can't speak for sure on that since I have not been down there. So I apologize for not having the inside access there. But from what I read from my coworkers at the Post-Dispatch, that performance against Washington was a performance that changed the course of history, if you will, for this season.
Awesome. Okay. Awesome. So,
I agree.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting to see where and how the Cardinals use him, because you know, Ben has said, it is game-changing stuff, and I think what is interesting about this entire process or closer by committee is the front office's approach at the beginning of the offseason saying, you know what, we're going after a closer – and that's going to come out. That's going to come from outside the organization. And now all of a sudden, it's come full circle to no. I think it might actually come from inside the organization. Do you have any thoughts on that, or can you kind of explain why that might be the case?
Well, I mean, the idea was, did they or could they identify the guy or guys that they needed to bolster their bullpen in the offseason? And, of course, there were some players that we in the media and in the fan base saw as perfect fits. And I think Brandon Morrow was the guy I really liked. But, of course, I mean, money talks. And, you know, the Cardinals, the Cubs are now the Cardinals, and the Cardinals the Cubs. You know, I mean, he looked to go to a winning team, and that's where Morrow went. And we could talk about Ass and Reed all day, and clearly the Cardinals did their due diligence on that, but for whatever reason, they didn't want him. And then you look at Greg Holland, which was, pun intended, the biggest curveball of the offseason, the idea that the guy with all these saves, they're just sitting out there, you know, waiting to save games for a Major League Baseball team, yet for whatever reason teams aren't going after him. I think you could look at him and say, and I know, you know, people within the organization will probably point out, or you know, I talked to a lot of people, like, all right, he had a great season, but how many months of those were great? And when he was bad, he was awful. And that's a weird trajectory. Do you want to pay that much for a closer? And so when they identified Luke Gregerson and they said, this is a guy that we think can help us this coming season, whether it's as a closer or as a key reliever, of course, he's banged up. And yeah, so it's just weird because I think we have been programmed to think like every team has certain things, like every team has a closer, every team has five starting pitchers, every team has a fourth outfielder, if you will. But the way that the game is going and what we're clearly seeing with the Cardinals is there's a lot of hybrid to it, and at the end of the day, the Cardinals didn't go out and splurge on these free agent pitchers, be it starters or relievers, because they felt they had similar talent for way less the price in their own system.
Yeah, and I think you can't understate the money aspect when it comes to Greg Holland, in my opinion, at least. You know, the reports suggesting he wants a 3-year deal, you know, $42 million, somewhere around there. That's just obviously too much money. I don't think the Cardinals were going to go do that. If they're not going to go after Wade Davis and pay him $17 million, what makes me think the Cardinals would actually go after Greg Holland? Sure, the interest is there, but it just didn't seem that way. What about Alex Colomé, though? We heard all the rumors. You know, there was that whole issue with him following, you know, sites on Instagram. Was that ever a serious thing, or is that just something that was kind of, maybe, but no thanks?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was serious. Like, they started to stitch his name on the back of a jersey or what have you. But I mean, you know, they did their due diligence, of course, and that was really exciting at the time because Longoria was still with that team, and I say exciting like the whole world wants Longoria. I at least thought he was a fascinating player. But yeah, of course, Colomé was the was a target there. Well, really, Archer would be the best guy to get out of there, but
right.
They didn't get that. But I don't think that was like gonna happen. Like it was on the cusp, but it was clearly something they looked into. And yeah, that was. I mean, in our world, like we go with what we've got, right? And what we can control and what we can see is Instagram and Twitter. And when a ball player does something on there, that stands out because that's our world now. And last year when Yadier posted his picture of Oquendo or posted his thing about resting and Matheny, and we saw which players liked it on Instagram, like that, I mean, some people might dismiss that as nothing, but in our world, in our social media world, that definitely is something to talk about, as Bonnie Raitt was saying.
I'd like to kind of jump on that about the Carson Kelly thing. Do you see him as an option in the future, or do you see him as trade bait?
That's a great question. I don't know because they made Carson Kelly, right? They took this guy from another position and Frankensteined him into Yadier's heir. I mean,
they sent him hard.
Yeah, he's their, he is their guy, and they earmarked. So, look, I mean, the minute, I remember just sitting there at Yadier's press conference last year. I guess it was April of last year, and everybody's smiling, and we're all happy, and Yadier's staying for 3 more years, and like it was at that point, it was like Carson Kelly, you know, didn't exist. And I'm like, guys, what about Carson Kelly? And here we are. Obviously, stuff happened during that last year. Now here we are this year. Like, he's back in AAA after Mozeliak himself had said there's nothing left for Carson to prove at the AAA level. Now, Carson did do pretty poorly offensively in this past season. But, yeah, I'm not afraid to trade him. If there's a player that can help the team today, if only because of Andrew Knizer, who I believe I'm pronouncing that correct, or maybe incorrectly, regardless. You know who I'm talking about, the catcher from North Carolina State, who had a pretty good spring and is a very fine young ball player as well. So I'm not afraid to trade Carson Kelly, but gosh, I mean, it's almost like a relationship in a way. Like they've started dating and they've grown together and they've gone through tough times. And man, you want to really see this thing through with Carson.
I want to jump on this one too. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Tito.
Oh, I was just going to ask you, Ben, and kind of comment if the idea is to get him at bats, which I don't mind, why bring him up last year though? I mean, why have this carousel with him if the idea is to continue to get him at bats? You saw, and you mentioned this, you know, he didn't do very well last year. And it was very obvious that he needed playing time. But why continue this carousel if you're going to go back and say, oh, well, he just needs more at-bats?
No, you're absolutely right. You make a very good point. And it's almost like they're trying two different strategies with the same player. And my guess is also, I mean, Carson came to camp and they were expecting a particular type of production out of who they thought was going to be their big league backup. And they weren't seeing it out of that human being. So I think, you know, we could talk all we want about the strategy from last year. Last year at the time, they thought he was ready to go. And, yeah, he struggled sparingly for St. Louis, but they still felt defensively he was a guy that could fit in around there, when, you know, fill in and fit in. But, yeah, this spring was a surprise to them. And then you got Peña in there, and you know, he's sturdy and a fantastic defensive player, and they're going to let Carson try to find Carson again.
I think Carson Kelly would have stuck around a little bit longer if they were a little bit more happy with his defense. I think they would have sacrificed some offense, but I don't know if it's a concentration issue or whatnot. But I think Kelly would still be here if his defense was on par. It just wasn't during spring.
Yeah. And then they've been so happy with Peña, so they're like, all right, let's. I mean, again, we can't stress enough that Carson Kelly didn't play catcher in eighth grade and ninth grade. And tenth. He didn't get those reps behind the plate. And I'm not trying to make an excuse for him. I'm just simply pointing out the fact that, I mean, part of the minor leagues for any player and part of growing up is just to get those at-bats, get those reps. So they're programmed, if you will, to handle the grind that is the major leagues.
You know, Dr. Miles here, one of the things that I cover for us at Redbird Rants is the Memphis team. And you know, that's where I live, and I love the Memphis Redbirds. But Mr. Hogman, can you talk to us? And by the way, you and I graduated high school the same year. So when I think back to the Cardinals of past, I think back to Bush 2 and the AstroTurf and all that good old stuff and Ozzie's backflips and all that good time. So it's nice to be in company with another class of 98, albeit I was in Arkansas and you were not. That being said, what can you talk to us a little about the farm system and toss out a couple of names that stand out to you as people who we should watch and keep an eye on as they make their progressions upward.
Sure. And it's funny, I think that someone my age is a doctor, and I think about what my buddies are doing, sitting on a bar stool across St. Louis. Let's talk about the minor leagues. And, of course, some of these names I'll throw out, you saw glimpses of last season. But, I mean, to me, Adolis Garcia is one of the most exciting players in the organization. We're talking about a guy who has fleet feet and definitely has a presence in the batter's box. And I'm pretty sure we'll see him at some point this year. And then the guy that I was most disappointed about, if you will, in spring training because of his two injuries was Tyler O'Neill, who you saw in Memphis for a couple months there down the stretch. And Tyler O'Neill is fascinating, if only because he doesn't look like a human being. There's all of us human beings who look human.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, and then there's Tyler O'Neill, who looks like the Incredible Hulk. And it's fascinating. And, like, you know, I always kind of laugh, like, gosh, like, because I wrote a big piece about him from spring training, and he's talking about his weightlifting, and I'm like, am I going to end up like those 1990-whatever journalists that wrote the McGuire stories and wrote those stories about the guys who just worked out so hard, and that's why they were so strong? Am I going to look foolish like that with my article about Tyler O'Neill? I hope not, but he seems like a good dude. And the fact is, I was hoping to see him mash a little this spring, but those injuries kind of held him back. And I guess the benefit for you, Doc, is you'll get to see him mash some, break some windows at AutoZone.
Yeah, and I'll be happy if he does break some of those YMCA windows that are out in left center. Thank you for that. One of the things that I've written about in the past is just how great that coaching staff is in Memphis and how impactful they are on the young, uprising studs. And one of those, one of my favorites of late has been Jose Martinez. And speaking of Jose and his being able to hang around with the Cardinals, what's your take on the designated hitter in the National League?
Oh, wow. That's a nice little I was with you on your pitch tunnel, and then right there at the end, you got me with that breaking ball with the DH question there. Well done. I hate watching pitchers bat, but I love the strategy that it leads to. So I don't know if I guess I am talking out of both sides of my mouth. But I think regardless of what little old Benjamin Hockman thinks, I think the commissioner and the folks in New York will soon decide that baseball needs more offense, even though it got suddenly turned into a home run derby sport, or at least a three true outcome sport. And they'll probably add that ninth actual hitter to the National League at some point, which would surely help the St. Louis Cardinals this year. In reference to your friend Jose Martinez, is one of my favorite stories in baseball, if you will. I mean, we're talking about a guy who spent essentially a decade of his life chasing a dream. And every year, I mean, can you imagine? It's almost like Truman Show or Groundhog Day, where it's like, here I go again, like AAA baseball. And I'm hitting the ball well. I'm hitting 385 for the Omaha team, or whatever the team is in Kansas City's organization, and I'm still not in the major leagues. What do I have to do? What if I hit 1,000? Then would I be up there? I mean, he's like, what do I have to do? And to see him at this age make the big leagues last year and then just turn into this confident, powerful line drive hitter, it really has been a special thing. And he's a good dude. I love talking to Jose Martinez. He's funny, and he just cares, and he's in there. You talk about like guys and their personality in baseball, and you know there's something to be said about like a minor leaguer, you know, kind of speaks when spoken to and all that, and the big leaguer, you know, kind of carries himself differently. Well, man, once Jose Martinez became a big leaguer, this personality just blossomed, and it's just a lot of fun to watch. He really is a good teammate, and he fits in fine with his team. The question is, how many at-bats will he get with this team in the National League?
And that's something I actually want to, you know, go over a little bit, is how to get his bat into the lineup. And I think we've seen it a couple times in these spring training games with Mike Matheny's lineup and putting him at first and Carpenter at third. Is it worth, in your opinion, is it worth going with that lineup? Because I feel he is a much more accomplished hitter than Jed Jerko. And I'm okay with Carpenter sliding over to third base. And I understand everybody's all up in arms about his defense, but I am willing to look past that defense at times to keep the hottest bat in the lineup. And I personally think there's no question that he has the hottest bat in the lineup at this point.
Yeah, and we've seen Matheny in the past do everything as drastic as wedge Matt Adams in left field just to get a hitter or a hot bat some at bat. I don't think he would be afraid to put Matt Carpenter at third just to get Jose in there. But I mean, I think we have to look at Jed Jerko though, who started off extremely strong last year, proved that that, you know, I don't want to call him Mr. April, but you know, he was Mr. April last year, and why not see if that trend continues here in 2018? But you're absolutely right. Like there's going to be a good masher on the bench for St. Louis seemingly every game, and that's a good problem to have. But it's also, I mean, it comes down to managing. I mean, we talk about like what is the role of a manager and how much sway does a manager have on a team? Well, the actual word of his job, the managing of a roster and the playing time and all that is imperative, because you have to be able to read and see when a player needs more at-bats, even though he's struggling, or if a guy is doing well, but he can be content coming off the bench. And that's a lot of stuff that we can look at the advanced stats all day, and we do, and we learn a lot from those, but we don't have necessarily all of the information that Matheny and Mabry and the fellows have.
Right. And there's another follow-up to this would be, what happens in the situation if Matheny decides to platoon Jed Jerko and Colton Wong? Is that something that's, you know, realistic, or is that just like, maybe, but not really?
I mean, anything is realistic in the course of 162 games, and we have no idea who's going to get hurt and who's gonna be Grichuk from last year and who's going to be Tommy Pham from last year. You know, who's the guy that we are banking on to be a key contributor and won't be, and who's the guy that's going to surprise the heck out of us and be an all-star caliber player. Funny enough, I think Colton Wong is the guy that's going to have a breakout season. I'm high on him. I love his energy, his glove, and of course his on-base percentage from last year stepped up. So, yeah, it's hard to answer, like, the specific questions in that regard since the season hasn't started, but I don't think they're afraid to try anything if it means helping the team win a ballgame.
Sure.
Hey, Benjamin,
sure.
A real quick question about Wong. We talked about him on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. I believe he has the ability, the physical ability to be a leadoff man. It's just the mentality. Have you had a chance to speak with him? Do you know where his head's at? Do you feel that he's a confident player now? Because in my opinion, I think it's time he's got to step up and do something. I think last year he was on track to do that, but injuries got in the way. Where do you stand with Wong? Is he ready to take that next step?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I've had enough conversations with him. Yeah, I mean, he is a very emotional human being, and that is not necessarily a bad thing if harnessed correctly. And when he is playing baseball at a confident level and, of course, a healthy level, we're seeing I don't want to say all-star caliber second baseman, we're seeing a above average second baseman, and last year we saw it for many of those games, I don't know if he's leadoff for St. Louis, if only because you want to see this Dexter thing through. And Dexter, I mean, we've all looked at the numbers. If you take out maybe the first however many games of last year, his numbers were pretty good last year. Or if you even just look at him in whole, he had some more slugging production than in previous years. So even in a, quote, off year for Dexter, he still produced to a degree. And now this year he's rejuvenated and ready to go. So I don't know if Colton's going to sneak up in that one spot anytime soon. But, I mean, I would love to have the Colton Wong of last year this year batting eighth. Oh, my goodness.
I agree. I'm talking about just like his skill set. I think his physical ability, he could do it. But like you, I'm fine with him batting eighth. If he's comfortable down there and he's doing what he's doing, so be it. That's fine. And just ability-wise and skill set, I think he could be a leadoff man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Ben, go ahead, Dr.
I'm sorry.
Crash, go ahead. Go ahead.
We were kind of talking about mashers. I just wanted to squeeze this in real quick. I'm a huge Marcell Ozuna fan already, just his personality and what he did last year and what he can possibly do this year. We know that Mo is going after big bats. Do you believe that he's a big enough bat for this offense?
I think so. I mean, if he gave you this year what he gave Miami last year, you'd sure as heck take it, right? So,
oh, absolutely.
You want to think that I know those numbers were astounding, and those numbers are the Playboy centerfold equivalent of statistics if you look at what Ozuna did last season. So I don't know if he'll be able to duplicate it, but gosh, we've seen so many extra base hits in spring already. Once he's got his swing down, and of course he provides this energy. I think I'm good with it. I'm excited about it. I think that it was the right move. You know, a lot of people and a lot of smart baseball people would have said, nah, they should have gone with Yelich. He's got more of an upside. He's more of a complete player, or at least will be at some point, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm excited.
I was
about
one of the few that wasn't on the Yelich train.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, I like the big bear, as they call him, and, you know, it's also been really fun being in the clubhouse and watching him interact with Yadier and, of course, his good friend Carlos Martinez, who he hung out with and hangs out with even before the two became Cardinals teammates. And, you know, he's definitely a big, large personality to match his physical presence. And the one thing that we don't know about him is from the standpoint of winning ball games, is he a winning player? Is he excited and ready to be a part of this? And you'd have to think after all those years of Miami that he's hungry to do more than just put up numbers for a losing team.
I think evidence of what he means to the St. Louis Cardinals, you could see last night in the game against the Blue Jays. You know, it's in a fifth inning in a 0-0 game, and in he steps and cranks one out to left center.
Yeah.
And last year, there wasn't really anybody on the Cardinals that you could confidently say, okay, it's going to be a home run. I mean, you haven't seen that since Albert Pujols. And in comes Marcell Ozuna from Miami, and I legitimately think that at any given point in his at-bat, he is going to crank one out because he is that prolific of a hitter.
And the Cardinals have not had that in a long time. Well, I shouldn't say a long time, at least a year because Halladay. But it's been a while since the Cardinals had a kind of thumper like that, that you kind of stop and the other teams have to worry. He's that guy, I think.
Yeah, and I remember writing things when and I'm sure you guys wrote similar things or had similar mindsets, just the idea of, like, not only will he hit home runs, but, gosh, like, from an exit velocity standpoint, is it possible he'll hit the have the fastest exit velocity on the team this year in the National League? And can he hit the farthest home run at Busch Stadium? I remember doing some analysis on that, looking at some of the longest bombs at Busch and where some of his home runs could add up. In baseball, we talk about it, and I've written about it a lot, like the aura of the home run, the idea that you play the game in these confines, and if a human being is good enough and strong enough and smart enough, sorry to go Stuart Smalley on you, but I think you see what I'm saying, like, he can hit the baseball out of the confines, and he's rewarded the ultimate reward, a run, for that. And it's a pretty cool thing in our sport. You don't really have that in other sports. And so we love the home run just so much. And it's our, I don't know, it's like, I'm not doing a good job of explaining it, or not good enough as I wanted to, but, like, we definitely look at the home run almost like this, like we're wide-eyed 9-year-olds always. And now the Cardinals have a guy who's going to hit 30-plus of them.
All right. Real quick, I'm kind of keeping track of the time. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know you have dinner coming and all that.
I'm good.
Do you have time for
it? No, but I'm good.
You good?
I'm good.
Okay.
Don't hesitate to ask anything. Yeah.
All right. If we could, can we jump back to the Cardinal talk in a minute? I wanted to make sure I got this in before the chat was over. You kind of think of reasons to invite somebody on the show, obviously your personality and stuff like that, but I was happy to find out that you have a book coming out. It's called The Big 50, St. Louis Cardinals, The Men and Moments That Made the St. Louis Cardinals. And I see that it's forwarded by Tony La Russa. Can you give us some thoughts about your book?
Yes. And honestly, it was one of the coolest experiences of my life to write basically a love letter to St. Louis and to my hometown team, and to capture the stories and the excitement that is Cardinal baseball. I grew up reading a lot of Cardinals books, and I wanted to write a book I hadn't read already. And so when I started writing The Big 50, which is basically 50 different chapters about the Cardinals, I didn't want to just, regurgitate anything. So I tried to find unique ways to tell stories. And, I went and got a beer with Stan Musial's grandson. And for the Stan Musial chapter, he talked about the different restaurants they would go to in St. Louis and how Stan loved to interact with the fans and interact with family members, and great stories like this guy Brian Swayze, his grandson, he would go to meals with him 7 days a week, And he said to Stan, he's like, Stan, to be honest, like, this is fun. You're my man, but you're literally the man. But I'd like to go on some dates. I'm desperately single here. And Stan's like, bring them along. And so this guy would bring these girls on dates to dinner with his grandpa, and they'd love it. And he'd whip out the harmonica, of course, and have some fun. So just stories like that were just so cool to hear. And I interviewed just so many different people, from Jenna Fisher of The Office and John Hamm and Christopher Jackson, the original George Washington in Hamilton, who's from the area. I interviewed a circus expert about Ozzie Smith's acrobatic body, and just had a lot of fun telling stories and getting to know some people. Of course, got to know Tony La Russa really well during the process, and what a pleasure that was. So, yeah, I poured my heart into this book, and I did it for the fans, and hopefully you can pick it up. It's available online right now, The Big 50 Cardinals, Amazon.com.
Yeah, I see that it will be released on May 1st, but it is available for pre-order now, and I think I'm going to order myself one.
Thank you. Yeah, breaking news, the books are arriving early, I heard from Grandma.
Awesome. Well, Ben, I want to get into a couple more questions about the St. Louis Cardinals, and I think there is one that is definitely on a lot of people's minds now, and that is, what are the keys to success for this team in 2018? In my personal opinion, the number one, and it's going to be the number one for a lot of teams, it's starting pitching. And a lot of people are not very high on the Cardinals rotation, seemingly because of inexperience, because of injury issues or consistency problems. What about the Cardinals rotation makes you believe in them and that they will have success this year?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I love the way Luke Weaver has looked, and he looked good tonight in his short outing against Toronto in Montreal. I mean, we're talking about a guy who could definitely be a Cardinal for many years, and an important Cardinal. I love his stuff, and last year, you know, and the reality is that last year he beat up on a lot of bad teams if you look at his numbers, but gosh, you watch him in spring, and he's got the stuff. He's got the mindset, this mentality. You know, he kind of looks like a toothpick out there. But you talk to his teammates, notably Jack Flaherty, who was a roommate of his, and Jack's like, this guy is so mean on the mound. He is so energetic and so hungry and a bulldog almost. And you're like, that guy's a bulldog? And he's like, yeah, definitely. So I'm fired up to see, you know, whatever the ending amount, the ending total will be, whether it's 140, 160, 180, 200, whatever we see from Luke Weaver, I'm excited about that. Yeah, this Miles Mikolas thing, I mean, it is a gamble, but I feel a little better knowing that the Chicago Cubs were interested in him as well.
Yankees too.
Yeah, but, you know, he's got a nice repertoire, and even works in that split change a little bit, which is fun. And, yeah, I mean, so – really, though, it's funny because when we have these debates about the Cardinals starting pitching, we always, or most people seem to just kind of assume that Carlos will be awesome. And I'm guilty of it, and he's earned the right for us to think that. But then you look at how weird the spring was, and, you know, I don't know. Like I think he's got a – I mean, he's the ace of the staff, and you hand him the baseball the first day and every fifth day, but – I really, really hope that this spring wasn't a harbinger for anything, except just a way for him to figure some things out. And once he gets out there in New York, that he's the guy we saw in the All-Star game twice.
Yeah, and I for me, the thing with Mikolas is obviously he hasn't pitched in the major leagues since 2015. He's never pitched more than even 60 innings, and that is the big scare right there, as you say, the big gamble in all of this. If he is not, you know, if he's not doing well by, let's say, May, you know, is the de facto just straight to Jack Flaherty, or is Alex Reyes going to be somebody that is going to fill in the starting rotation?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is I think they would have to – I don't think they're ready to hand Reyes the baseball on May 1st and say pitch seven innings. I think it'll be a somewhat of a process. I know he'll be working towards that point in different capacities with his bullpen sessions and what have you. But, yeah, I mean, you could look at the St. Louis Cardinals as they have seven starting pitchers on the roster, if you count Wainwright also, of course. So it's
right.
Like, all right. If Miles stinks, you still have another choice or two other choices if everybody's healthy. And this is a good problem to have. This is, again, why they work so hard in developing their guys. And again, why they didn't go out and spend stupid money on, you know, insert 32-year-old pitcher here.
Jake Arrieta.
or whomever. Alex Cobb or whomever, yeah.
And I think the reason for success for the Cardinals is exactly what you're mentioning right there. It's the depth. I think the depth of the St. Louis Cardinals is something that no other team in the National League and maybe in baseball can match at this point. So if somebody does go down, they do have somebody to step up. And I personally think that is their biggest strength going into this season. Now, I want to switch to the bullpen, though. What is it about the bullpen that makes you say, okay, this is where it all has to stop? We need consistency, and how do we get there?
Yeah, I mean, there are some players in the bullpen who are stellar, and if you look at Tyler Lyon, and if you look at that sinker ball that Matt Bowman throws, you know, when he comes in to save the day when they got two guys on and one out in a key seventh inning. I mean, those are stud big league players who Cardinals fans should be happy to hang their hat on. You'd have to think that Brett Cecil will be better than next year. And we think we're getting so bad with him that Cecil Whitaker's pizza was thinking about just dropping their name and calling themselves Whitaker's. somewhere at some Funny Bone comedy club in St. Louis, they did a rim shot right there. I'm excited about Dominic Leone. I guess we're calling him Dom Leone now. I've seen it in some of the recent reports. I really like his cutter, and I think he's going to be an effective reliever. So, I mean, yeah, it's easy. And then Sam Tuivasa, even if just you go by what Yadier Molina said early in camp when he said unprovoked that Sam was a guy that could be a closer for the Cardinals, a guy that could be nasty for the Cardinals. It was, you know, that's cool to hear. And I remember talking to Sam about that, and he was like, yeah, what a special thing. What a boost of confidence to have if Yadi himself is saying that. So, I mean, yeah, they didn't get a superstar from the free agent market or a big name that I guess Gregerson's as close as you get. But if you look at each guy, there's confidence, but it's only March. You know, let's talk in June. Let's talk in August.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And one thing that I also want to talk about, we were talking about Marcelo Zuna and how he has made his presence felt in the lineup. What do you think of Matt Carpenter hitting three in the three hole? I'm of the mindset that his on-base percentage is so key to this offense that it makes complete sense for him to be hitting in front of Ozuna. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, smart people could make a case that he should be batting first, Matt Carpenter.
Correct.
But I think the reality is, like, can you imagine telling Dexter Fowler, like, all right, we brought you in to lead off and play center field, and 1 year into this you're playing right field and batting third or whatever. I mean, but I think they still have faith in Dexter. Clearly they have faith in Dexter as a leadoff hitter. With Matt Carpenter, I mean, he's walking in baseball is clearly a skill, clearly a talent, and he's shown it at a high level. But if he's going to be in that third spot, if he's going to be – in an important spot in the lineup. Yeah, the reality is that he's going to have to hit more doubles, and he's going to have to be the Matt Carpenter that we saw playing an All-Star game with that OPS. And can he stay healthy? There's questions with him, but yeah, I definitely like him in front of Ozuna. I mean, yeah, again, on paper the boys look good, right? On paper this. But again, mm-hmm. heading into last season, on paper they look good. And if it wasn't for Memphis last year saving the day, if it wasn't for Paul DeJong showing up out of, I don't say nowhere, but showing up and suddenly turning into, you know, Troy Tulowitzki, that team might not even have been in the playoff talks in September. So Memphis saved them last year. I don't think they want to get to a point where these new, like, clearly, they're going to look to Harrison Bader for help this year. They're going to look to some of the Memphis guys for help. But I don't think that they're going to need or rely on a crazy number of guys to save the day. They want their big-name guys to be just that.
I have a question about Matt Carpenter. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead with Matt Carpenter's question.
Matt Carpenter, how concerned are you about his shoulder, and have you gotten any kind of answers, really? Is it rotator cuff? Is it something else?
Yeah, I have not heard that it's crazy, like serious, like surgery or anything like that. And the good thing is it happened early in spring, and he was dealing with the injuries early in the spring, and he's looking regular, if you will, now. So I don't love Matt Carpenter, the defensive player, but I adore Matt Carpenter, the grinder in the batter's box. And I think it was Doc that said earlier in the podcast that, like, you'll sacrifice, you know, a missed play or a poor fielding attempt that if it means also getting on base four times in a key game.
Hey, I'd like to take you back just for a second. You talked about, on paper, this team looks great, and on paper, this team looked great last season. You also talked a lot about managing the game. And listen, I am an unapologetic lack of Matheny fan sitting here today. You recently wrote a piece about Matheny, but speaking of all of those things, and by the way, the setup of talking about on paper is I think Matheny does a fantastic job strategizing on paper, but it does a poor job in game management. Now, that being said, the coaching staff is different this year. The supporting staff is different. Different in also a throwback to the way it was before. In the times that you've been around the clubhouse, how do things feel different this year? Because they look different.
Yeah, it's a good question. Being down there in spring, and we've written and tweeted about it a little bit, just the camaraderie with the coaches. It's not something you necessarily hear about in sports very often in a player-driven business, but they are really, really enjoying each other's company, and honestly and authentically, and that is good to see early on in this process. But, again, we have not played a game yet, and, you know, for all the changes that Mike Maddux has made, to the way things went in camp, to some of the newfangled ideas he had, putting guys on the backfield to the pitching in the real games and things like that, all that is fun and fine and something to write about in the friendly confines of Jupiter, Florida. But when we're at Wrigley Field in April and there's a decision to be made and he thinks one thing and Matheny thinks the other, and Matheny, of course, has the final say, and Matheny's guy blows it out there. I mean, who knows? I mean, what will happen in that regard? So, yeah, they brought in Mike Maddux and Eversgird, smart pitching thinkers, to elevate the young players and elevate the whole staff. And I'm confident about it. Mozeliak seems confident about it. But again, until we get to Wrigley, we can't be certain.
And speaking of our friendly northern rivals, I want to get your thoughts on the NL Central this year. And these will be the last couple questions we've got for you. So we do appreciate your time. So let's talk a little bit about the NL Central and how you think you see things shaking out. A lot of the preseason rankings have the Cardinals finishing second or third. Do you think the Cardinals have a legitimate chance to be the NL Central champions, as Alex Rodriguez picked today for Fox Sports?
Oh my gosh, all right. That boy, A-Rod. no, I think this is a second-place team. I think this is a better team than last season, so that's good, which means I think they'll probably make a wild card push, a legitimate one at that. But the Chicago Cubs, my goodness, they look really, really good. And now they got Hap leading off, and he is supposed to be a multi-dimensional player. And, of course, he hit a lot of home runs, DeYoung-esque, if you will, last season in a short amount of time. And they got Yu Darvish to take over for Arrieta. They got a whole season of Quintana. And they got Brandon Morrow, the aforementioned pitcher that we were breaking down when we're talking bullpen. I mean, this Cubs team, there is a lot to like if you are indeed a Chicago Cubs fan. And the reality is the St. Louis Cardinals have to have a lot of things go right for them just to even stay in the mix. And here's hoping that they do for the fans, because these fans have put up with a lot of stuff the last 2 years. And like I wrote in that Matheny column that you mentioned, if the Cardinals miss the playoffs for the third season in a row, I mean, in a wild card world, that's unacceptable. And you know, you can't fire the players, you can't fire Ozuna or what have you. So you make a change where you can, and that would have to be at the manager's job. I mean, I'll tell you, like, I look at it like this, like, I mean, if the Cardinals win, if they finish like 85 wins or something again, I mean, at what point are the Cardinals not, and I've written this, at what point are the Cardinals not the Seattle Mariners? Just like every year coming in, you know, they're not rebuilding, but they're clearly not making the playoffs and in the 90 win range. You know, they've got some good pieces, but 3 years in a row of this, at that point, you're just you're the Mariners. You're like this like hovering team that's kind of stuck.
Sure.
Can I just put this in there, because I want to say thank you, Benjamin Hockman, for writing a piece in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that's very Bernie Miklas-esque and that calls for Matheny's head on a platter, because I know that our readers at Redbird Rants are very tired of me writing about it, but I will not stop until we see changes, and I'm holding my pitchforks and my torches. Back to Tito.
Well,
thank you.
You know, real quick, before Tito, just, I will say, like, I mean, I'm trying to give Matheny the benefit of the doubt. And in the piece, I talked a lot about how he continues to grow as a thinker, and now they've surrounded him with Maddux and Willie McGee and Jose Oquendo. Maybe they've kind of looked at some of his deficiencies and then, you know, plugged the holes, if you will. And here's hoping, for everybody's sake, maybe not yours, but most people's sake, that Matheny gets it right, gets it done, and we're talking about the playoff Cardinals and everything's fun. But the reality is a lot has to go right for that to happen.
Right, and I think as time has gone for me, I have grown to – appreciate Matheny slightly more than I initially thought I would, just
sure.
Because at the end of the day, it's the players that have to perform. Matheny
yeah.
can push all the right buttons, and case in point is Brett Cecil from last year. You sign him to a nice
mm-hmm.
contract, you put him out there, and he just absolutely falls flat on his face.
Yeah.
Is that Matheny's fault? No. You can't blame the manager for a pitcher not, you know, pitching to his ability. And so
yeah.
that's where I find some common ground with Matheny in saying, you know, I can overlook some of your mistakes, but at some point, and much to your point in your article, is when is enough enough? Is it 85 wins? Is it missing the playoffs the third year in a row when this city and these fans – are not used to that, and I think that's obviously the biggest transition that everybody is going through is not realizing we aren't at that level. But even you said it yourself, You know, the Cubs are as good as they are, but that is practically minus a couple pieces and adding, you know, Yu Darvish. But that is the same team that won in 2016. Mm-hmm. And the Cardinals are not even close to them. I mean, they might be an inch closer, but they're not that close. And I think that's the whole crux of this entire offseason for all of us, even at Redbird Rants and other sites, is that the Cubs are that much further ahead of the Cardinals, even with the addition of Ozuna.
Yeah, I'll tell you real quick. I mean, that's what I put in my column today in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the idea of, like, follow me on this, entering 2015, the Cardinals were the perennial champs. The Cardinals were the Apollo Creed, and the Cubs were the underdog Rocky. Well, now, four seasons into this, like in the movie Rocky IV, we've got the Cubs as this Ivan Drago indestructible team, this machine, and it's the Cardinals who are now like Rocky in that movie, trying desperately to come up with something to knock down the machine. And I mean, hopefully for our friends Festus and Fenton and Clayton and Ledoux and all over Cardinal country, they will figure out a way to knock down Drago, to break Drago.
Okay, so I've got one final question for you, and then we're going to let you go so you can enjoy your dinner, and then we'll finish up here. What do you put on your Emo's pizza?
Pepperoni. Pepperoni. For me, I know it's kind of standard. But I adore Emo's. I adore Provel. When they were looking at possibly getting a soccer team, MLS team to St. Louis, I was all in favor of calling it a FC Provel. And unfortunately, we never had that chance.
Yes, I'm a pepperoni bacon kind of guy, so I'm with you 100% of the way.
I like that. Very cool.
Awesome. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a real pleasure to get to talk to you and kind of virtually meet you. And guys, if you guys have anything to say, go ahead right now, and then we'll catch Ben maybe on the next time if we can. And
yeah.
We'll have some final thoughts, and we'll go from there.
Just real quick, one more time, I just want to promote his book one last time. It's Amazon.com, The Big 50, St. Louis Cardinals, The Men and Moments That Made the St. Louis Cardinals. It's forwarded by Tony La Russa, and you can get it May 1st.
Thank you so much, Crash. I appreciate that. Oh, go ahead, please.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Thank you for your time, and hopefully we could have you back sometime and call you a friend of the show.
Yeah, and I love your guys' passion, and I'm excited to listen to more at the next podcast that you do. So good luck with everything. Keep having fun looking at advanced stats and watching the ball games, and just enjoying 162 adventures.
All right. Thanks, man.
Absolutely.
We appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
See ya.
See ya. Okay, so that was Ben Hockman of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and we want to give him a huge thank you. We are going to take a very quick break, and we've got some final thoughts. Don't go anywhere. Okay, so we're back with the official Redbird Rants podcast, Extra Innings Edition, first episode for this podcast. Guys, what an incredible last hour. I mean, I honestly can't say enough.
It flew by.
Oh, yeah.
It went by so fast. It was it was really enjoyable. I enjoyed him being on with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and go ahead.
Let's also say to you, Crash, thank you for coming up with such a great idea of doing an extra innings podcast and reaching out to members of the St. Louis media and those people who are as passionate about St. Louis Cardinals baseball as we are, and they actually get to get paid for it. A great idea. So thank you so much for bringing that to us.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to try something a little different and be included with your show. I sincerely appreciate it.
No problem. So, guys, let's do a quick little recap. And did anything stand out to you guys about what Ben was saying regarding the St. Louis Cardinals?
Well, it stood out to me immediately that he's my age, and that makes me feel not so old amongst all of you young guns. So I certainly appreciate that. But I have to
right
say
there with
the
you,
thing
Doc.
That
we're the same age.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, fantastic! Oh, that feels so much better. You know, all
I'm
the joking
a
aside.
Ball, baby.
Oh, Whitey ball all day long. You know what
yep.
feels so good about hearing him talk about our team is the sense that something is different. And I love that that kept resonating, you know, that the approach is different, that the clubhouse feels different, that having Ozuna is different, that having Matt Carpenter even have to move over to third, maybe that's good or bad, but that is something different so that somebody like Jose Martinez can come up and be something different. And I think that this team has got to grab onto that something different to make 2018 an outstanding season. And it just, there was a lot of, maybe, I hope you guys picked up on it too, there's a lot of positive vibes flowing out of him about this team.
Yeah, and I think that's huge for this team. I think the past couple of years, obviously missing the playoffs, maybe a little tension going on, not everything going their way. It didn't come as easy as it used to come, and maybe they just need to loosen up a little bit. Maybe that time is now, finally.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things I took away from his positive attitude is that he seems pretty high on the St. Louis pitching staff, which I think is a huge boost. And I know that's something we as a group have discussed in the recent days because MLB.com writer Anthony Castrovince said that the Cardinals weren't even in the top 10 rotations. And so to hear him speak highly of the rotation, to feel confident in that rotation, it just makes me think that, yes, the Cardinals do have some flaws, but those flaws can be overcome with good pitching performances by our back three. And I truly think that the Cardinals, by the end of this year, will be a top 10 pitching staff, even if it is in the bottom half of that top 10. But I think that they're there now, and I was surprised to see them not in front of the Blue Jays, but that's what I took away from that.
Yeah, I'm very excited for Weaver, Flaherty, and eventually Reyes. Mm-hmm. There's definitely potential and a lot of excitement coming on the way.
Absolutely. Okay, guys, well, I think we're going to call it quits right there. Thank you so much to Dr. Miles and Crash for being on the official Redbird Rants podcast, Extra Innings Edition. This is episode 1. Catch us next Tuesday for episode 2. We hope to have our next special guest, but we won't tell you who it is. You'll just have to find out for yourself. So thank you, and go Cards.